This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Benign Images. Benign Images is a storyteller consulting company. Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, they help storytellers of all kinds to tell the stories that they feel they have a need to tell. Whether it's through simple editor services, consulting, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit, Benign Images will work with you to help you become a better storyteller. Start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is benignimages.com. BENIGN images.com. Go check them out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we've got on a political and social sort of commentator and a YouTuber. I don't know exactly how to describe her, but she's a very interesting young lady. She goes by the YouTube name Critical Condition, aka Cece. Cece, I'd like to welcome you to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great.
So that was probably one of my least succinct ways of introducing a guest ever. So why don't you tell the people who don't know you a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
I think your intro was pretty good. It was pretty spot on. I call myself a commentator, like a political commentator. My content has changed a lot over the course of the past year or so. And it started off with me just being kind of confused as a liberal, and kind of really starting to get attracted to the right wing and to Trump and MAGA and that whole thing a couple years back. And because I didn't really have any friends who were right wing, I sort of reached out to the online community to find people of like mind and to sort of discuss these ideas that seemed a little too taboo to discuss in my more liberal and feminist circles. So that's how that's where I started off. And that evolved into the content that I now make, which is a little bit more focused. I like to talk about femininity and, motherhood and family life. I try to promote the things that I think are important and sometimes get left by the wayside in the right-wing community. And with regard to when I talk about politics, it's really just sort of news commentary. I think as things kind of get a little more absurd out there, it's easier to kind of poke fun at what's happening and try and laugh, because it's at this point it's either laugh or cry.
Well, you are talking to the British female deadlift and bench press champion right now, so don't let the beard confuse you. I am a stunning and brave young lady.
That tweet was actually the one that made me aware of you. That was so funny. As soon as I saw that tweet, I was just like, this guy gets a follow. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's really strange that I've been joking that's the sign of female privilege, that I've been plugging away at my music and everything I do for the past like 10 years. And then I identified as a woman for a couple of seconds, and suddenly all these millions of people saw me. So,
well, this is the sort of world that we live in, because I mean, there are lots of guys out there who are doing the same thing, only they're not joking. It's real life for them. And this is the kind of world that female athletes are having to compete in. It's so unfair. It's so obvious, I think, to most athletes that there are some very characteristic differences between men and women, and the gender ideology that has seeped into every aspect of life, including athletics. It colors it with this absurdity. And that's why I think, when people like you make these sort of jokes and this little poking, it gets such attention, because it's kind of like a pressure valve. People get to laugh. People get to sort of feel that what they think and what they feel inside is finally validated in a way, because most of the time in polite society, we have to bite our tongue.
Yeah, I get a lot of direct messages and emails on every social media channel, just kind of like, thank you. Like, thank you. I can't do what you do. Like, I need to be anonymous on here. You know, like people who, they won't have a profile picture. They won't have their real name, but they're like, look, man, I'm silently supporting you. I work at this university, or I work at this company, or I'm doing this or that. And I can't say what you're saying because I'll get lynched. And it's interesting. So what do you, you know, I've got a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you.
Sure.
But what, so while we're on this topic, I mean, what do you think it is that has led to this situation? We're talking about people being afraid to voice very basic opinions and even facts. The censorship isn't coming from the government. The censorship is kind of coming from within, right? People are kind of silencing themselves and are worried about being, I guess, ostracized. I guess that's maybe how you even felt. And where do you think this stems from? Why do you think in 2019 and in the past couple of years, it's really reached this point where, in your words, it's getting a little bit absurd?
I think it comes from a lot of different places. But I think one of the main places where we see this sort of politically correct enforcement is it comes mostly from academia. That's been my experience. I was never exposed to these things, these ideas, until I went to university and I got my liberal arts degree. And I sort of got my programming. But the sort of establishment, the institution of academia, I mean, it has value in society. Normally, this is the institution that we look to for truth. We give them a kind of elite position in the hierarchy, you know, because we assume that the people who are there, who are running it, are there because they're competent, because they're the best of the best, because they worked hard to get there. And we can trust them. You know, we can trust that what they're saying is backed up by either science or immense study. And unfortunately, the academia has been kind of infiltrated with what I see as a kind of Marxism. And that sort of spills over into the social sciences, the softer sciences. And because these people are very loud, I mean, I think most people in general society, like, they don't actually feel this way. And it's not natural to think that, you know, men and women have zero differences. I think most people just they're aware that there are obviously differences, but because there's these people, they're a very loud minority and they hold positions of power that historically we've always looked to and trusted, we allow them to kind of bully us in a way. And I think that the waves of censorship that we've seen on social media over the past few weeks, especially with, you know, like Paul Joseph Watson and Laura Loomer, those people, and then more, and just back up a little bit further, Alex Jones, and more people from the dissident right, even back further from that, that creates this atmosphere online where people know if they start saying things that aren't in alignment with the established, accepted narrative, they're going to get either doxxed, they're going to lose their job, they're going to be ostracized, they're going to be called names, they're going to be attacked, maybe they'll lose their platform. And so it creates this kind of this sort of self-censorship, I think, in people, which is really dangerous, because I think speech and true speech is an integral part of a democratic society. Speaking is like thinking. And if we're not able to really speak what we believe to be true and figure things out and be wrong, I think that does a great disservice to individuals in a free society, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very bizarre. I graduated from university about 11 years ago now. And when I was in university, so many things that are now a thing were not a thing.
Yeah.
Really, like, so many of these ideas that have sort of bubbled up in the past 5 years. I mean, I guess they were hiding away quietly in the shadows since maybe the 60s or the 70s, and they've kind of been slowly gathering steam. But it seems like it really came to a head, I want to say, in around, I want to say, like, sort of 2013, 2014. It seems like lots of these ideas, not just one thing, but a whole bunch of these ideologies suddenly popped up. And I was like, whoa, what are all these terms and words and phrases that I'm now hearing, which were never a thing before? You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the thing that constantly confuses me, because I'm often... I often use the word they. So, I mean, we've both been doing it. You've been saying they, and I'm saying they, and I don't even know who they are. That's the thing. I'm like, who is, I'm there with my like tinfoil hat on. Like, who is they? Who am I even? Who's propagating all this stuff?
Well, I tend to think of when I say they is the people who benefit from this. I think a lot of the people who are propagating these things are not really the they that we should be worried about. I think the they that we should be worried about are the people who are the elite, the people who own our political parties from behind the scenes and can influence them via lobbying and actually benefit from having a public which is divided against itself. If that's divided on ideological lines, great. If that's divided on the lines of your sexual identification or maybe your race or your ethnicity or your religion, there's an infinite number of ways that people can be divided and pitted against each other. And I mean, it's a very common saying, you know, divide and conquer.
Yeah.
If people are fighting amongst themselves, the people who, you know, are cashing in on this sort of chaos in society can get away with it more easily.
Yeah, it does often seem to me. I mean, one of the things that annoys me most about lots of these ideas and the whole identity politics thing is that I feel it's a huge distraction.
Yes.
And it's so smart because even people like myself and yourself who, in a way, sort of see it for what it is, I think, and kind of try to rise above it, you still end up talking about it
because, of course,
it's still, you know, it's still there. It's still like it's a distraction from, I think, where people's focus and attention really should be. It's like whatever country you take or whatever community you take, it's like if you really wanted to make things better, you wouldn't be pushing these narratives that are splitting men against women, that are splitting black against white, rich against poor, I don't know. There, like you said, there's so many ways you can split that pie. And it seems like in the 90s, in the thousands, in the early 2010s, it seems like the Western world had reached a pretty sort of a happy medium where those lines had started to, people kind of, you know, weren't obsessing over these things again. You know, I don't know, white privilege or this thing or male supremacy or internalized misogyny or, you know, there's like hundreds of terms, right? There's just, it's like a package. It's like this little weird ideological secular religion. And all these ideas come as a package. And me as a black guy, if I'm like, no, I think white privilege is a bunch of junk, I don't believe in it, then people start getting mad at me. Right. I start getting like hateful messages like, oh, why don't you? I'm like, why would I? Like, I don't see evidence for it. Right. I live in the UK. I've been to like 60 different cities in the UK. Like, I'm a musician. I travel around a lot. I meet hundreds of thousands of people. This is not to say, you know, racism does not exist, but I do not think the UK is a racist country. Right. And then there's someone else who lives in the same place and they're like, you know, going, oh, this is that. And I'm kind of like, it's weird. I feel like I live in some sort of parallel universe where I don't know. Or the same thing happens with you touched on feminism earlier. Like, I find a lot of those ideas also annoying because keep in mind, I grew up in Saudi Arabia. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So, so if someone wants to talk about, you know, females not being viewed equally in society and with a law, right? I've actually lived in a place where there are laws on the books that mean, okay, men can do this, but women cannot do this, right? You can do that. And so when I'm here in the UK and you've got all these laws and completely equal law and you've got equal pay acts and everything like that, and then these women are still running around screaming that they're sick of being oppressed and they want equality, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, what do you want? Like, I've never understood it. Like, I don't get it. Like, they'll have marches and like, we're marching. What are you marching for? Equality. And I'm like, what do you mean? I don't know. My brain just gets really confused because I don't get it.
Well, these women have been sold the sort of story that they are the victim, right? There's been kind of like a boogeyman, the patriarchy that's been set up in opposition to them. And all of their all the things that they have, you know, failed in life, or any hardship that they've ever experienced, or anything that they may feel has been holding them back in life, can be projected onto this boogeyman. So it's a really easy way for people who aren't really interested in taking responsibility for their lives and for themselves to project onto the world what is ultimately their fault. Mm. That's one of the most sinister things that I think bothers me about feminism, is that it takes women's agency away. Because when we are able to say, you know, this is my weakness, I'm going to identify it, I'm going to work on it, I'm going to overcome it, and I'm going to find redemption in it. That's an extremely powerful experience that you rob people from when you set it up as this, victimization kind of mentality. I think it's despicable. I think feminism does a lot more to hurt women, to be honest, than it does to help them.
Oh, it's lovely to hear a woman say that. I get called all sorts of things when I say that. That was nice. That was nice and clean. I'm like, okay, cool. I feel validated now. I feel validated, because if I say that, you know, it's like, oh, well, you're part of the patriarchy, of course. So
yes, yeah.
You've got what do they say? Male fragility. That's the one, right?
Yeah. So same thing when I say I don't believe in white privilege. When I say that, of course, people are like, oh, look at this, like, you know, Nazi girl with her dusty hair. Like, who cares what she's saying? She's a part of it. You know, yeah. Like, I get the same thing when we speak on behalf of the
so do I. So just don't worry about those people.
Right? You can't. And I've gotten it so many times at this point, it's like water off a duck's back. Yeah. It doesn't bother me anymore, but I think it really does set up a dynamic between people of opposing views, where once, like you said, you know, maybe 30, 40 years ago, people would have had, you know, a kind of maybe lesser version of these views, but they could still talk. They can still dialogue with one another. We can't do that anymore. And that's kind of the alarming thing about what's happened in society. We've all become so polarized that discussion has become, you know, next to impossible.
Yeah. And the sad thing is, I mean, 30 to 40 years ago, some of these issues were a lot more valid, mm-hmm. right? They were more valid, right? If someone wants to talk about, you know, if someone lived through, the 40s or the 50s or the 60s, mm-hmm. and, you know, they want to talk about sexism or homophobia or racism or something like that, you know, these things haven't been entirely stamped out in society. Mm-hmm. But compared to the past and compared to the majority of the world, like, whether you're in the UK, the USA, Canada, like, we're doing pretty well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's going pretty well. Like, I don't know how much faster people want things to go, really. And I often joke that I'm a better feminist than most feminists.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, all these things you're saying, this is disempowering, right? Yeah. If you believe that there is this thing called the patriarchy, which supposedly I'm a member of, I haven't been invited to any meetings, but but I'm like, if there's this sort of invisible ghost that is just oppressing women silently and is just seeped into every aspect of culture, oftentimes I'll challenge someone with these viewpoints, and they'll say, oh, well, it's because it's systemic, or it's structural, yeah. or it's institutional, so you can't really see it, but it's there. And I'm just like, well, what are we supposed to do with that?
Right? Yeah.
If you can be like, okay, that employer or that company or that person or whatever.
Yeah, or a law or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Then it's like, okay, I'm like, I'll be with you.
Yeah.
But if you just say, oh, there's the British system is just structurally sexist. Or racist or whatnot, I'm kind of like, well, what do we do with that? Like, that just makes you angry, and it makes it harder to, you know, take that personal responsibility and succeed in anything. Because if I genuinely believed that I lived in a society that just like despised me because of, you know, my immutable attributes, I'm not gonna succeed. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna do all the things I can, because I'm always gonna be in my mind thinking, well, the whole game is rigged against me. So why try? Right. If you think the whole system is, you know, deeply, deeply bigoted, then I guess, you know, a tiny percentage of people, it might make them go harder, but I think the majority would just be like, well, you know, this is not going to bother.
This is the thing as well with feminism, is that there is, in my opinion, men and women aren't equal. Men on average are smarter. They have a higher IQ than women. That's why you see more men in STEM. They're stronger. You proved that, you know, in front of the whole world. There is a biological advantage to being a man. You have a longer fertility window. you know, men are fertile well into their 60s and 70s, whereas women have a shorter fertility window. Yeah. The part of being a woman where your body is designed for reproduction in the feminist viewpoint is something which is oppressive. So there are these natural things. In my opinion, this is the way God made us. This is the way God made the world. Some women have, you know, our advantages and men have their advantages. And feminists have been sold the lie that the natural order of things is the subject of their oppression. And they seek empowerment by trying to evade what is natural to them. Right. So that's why you see women trying to compete with men on every single dimension. And the women who are the exceptions, you know, a woman like Ronda Rousey being given like, you know, a star celebrity status because she can epitomize for many women what we will never be able to, because most women, you know, we can't compete the same way that a Ronda Rousey can. Right. No. So women, that's part of the reason why I talk about the things that I talk about on my channel is that. You know, we as women have, these are our weaknesses, these are our skills. And if we learn to love and embrace our femininity and our biology, instead of trying to imitate and mimic men, we will be a lot more fulfilled in our lives. We'll be able to succeed more. We'll be a lot more content. Because I don't know if you're aware of this, but women have self-reported on numerous studies around the Western world as being less happy, more depressed, more on pharmaceutical drugs than any other decade of polling in history. And I mean, when you look, like you said, things are pretty good, you know, like we're living in a high-tech society where comfort and enjoyment and luxury is around every single corner. So what's causing women to be so unhappy? And I think it's this, personally.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I often joke that we've moved forward in some ways and, you know, backwards in a lot of ways. Well, it's not really a joke. I think that's certainly in terms of morality and fulfillment and perhaps maturity. I think we are certainly, you know, the modern Western world, it's regressing in a way. So we're healthier. Well, are we even healthier? That's the thing.
Like, I don't
in
think
a way,
so, actually.
The medicine, the medicine is better.
Yes, yes.
The medicine is better, right? But we are actually less healthy. We're less fit. So I think it's like, yeah, you know, we've become wealthier, that we have more access to cool stuff. We have better technology, but morally, spiritually, religiously, we've regressed in a lot of ways. Like, I think that if you were to go back to 1970 or 1980, the average person and average society, you know, just had higher standards, you know, both for men and women in terms of like, okay, like you've talked about the feminine already. I mean, on the masculine side, you've got this sort of boy crisis, right? This sort of masculinity crisis where guys and young men, the sort of traditional roles and things that typically guys would have gone through that would make them a man and feel like a man for a whole bunch of reasons. And some of them, you know, are kind of like, fair enough. That's been stripped away a little bit. And I think it's also part of the reason why things like superhero movies and like video games and stuff are becoming even more popular, because it's like, okay, well,
escapism. It's like an escapism.
It is. And it's also a way to, it's like, okay, I can't be that hero in real life. Like maybe I would have been a couple decades ago. Like I can't be that warrior, that provider, whatever, but I can be it in this game, or I can watch somebody who's got some superpowers who's kind of do it, and I can live vicariously through them. That's kind of how I see it anyway.
Absolutely. And that's the other side of what has damaged society with regard to feminism's pervasiveness. The things that inspired men to carry their burdens with honor, it normally was a pretty girl, you know, a girl who would submit to his authority, who would help him raise kids, who would make the home happy, and would, you know, be a partner in life as opposed to a competitor in life. And we see this breakdown of, you know, people accepting what is traditionally our gender roles affecting every aspect of life. What incentive do men have to step up to the plate if they're not going to end up having like a loving family at the end of the day, you know? And the way that the dating scene has deteriorated with things like Tinder and, you know, women being extremely promiscuous and not wanting to settle down and putting a ton of emphasis on their career, putting their career before relationships, all of those things de-incentivize men from, you know, being masculine providers. And now I always feel like I have to say this, you know, like just throw in a hashtag, not all, so that I don't upset anyone. There will always be people who don't fit the mold. And I don't believe that we should crush those people's spirits or that we should clip those wings. Sure, there are going to be some women in STEM and there'll be some men who want to be ballerinas, you know, knock yourself out. But to sell this kind of ideology to kids now, this is in public school when kids are like 6 and 7 and 8 years old, that your gender is nothing. It can be anything you want. There's nothing about your biology that's supposed to influence who your identity is. It's a very, very sinister lie, because majority of people, a vast majority, like 98% of people who are biologically female identify as female and men male. And that,
I'd say it's a lot higher than 98%.
Well, it's on the rise, this transgender thing. It's on the rise.
Maybe in the West. I was going to say on a global level, I'd say like 99.99.
Easily, yeah. Yes, on a global level, absolutely. But in the West, it's something that, because children are being propagandized younger and younger, and this is something that really disturbs me, something that really bothers me, is the targeting of children with this gender ideology. You know, kids are impressionable, and they've been sort of taught that, you know, if you are this way, you're going to get extra attention. You're going to get, you know, special sort of props from everyone, and everyone's going to have to be nice to you, because if they're not nice to you, then they're going to get suspended for being, you know, a transphobe. It's literally incentivizing confusion in young children's mind. And then when you get to the medical aspect of that, where you're blocking puberty, you're giving hormones. I mean, we're in uncharted territory with it. And what is happening to the youth today is very, very scary to me.
It's disturbing. Like you said, I mean, I think whenever you cross that boundary into kids, then that's where a line needs to be drawn. Like, as far as I'm concerned with that whole issue, I'm like, look, if an individual adult wants to do whatever they want to do, I'm not going to approve of everything, but I don't need to approve. You don't need Zuby's approval for everything, right? But if you want to do something, you know, if you want to go and tattoo a barcode on your forehead, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend you do that. But if you want to, you know, you can. I don't think you should do it. I don't know. I don't think if you're a man, I don't think you should remove your, like, I think you should think really long and hard before you remove your genitals and, you know, start taking hormones and stuff like that. If you fully thought of it and you've considered it, you know, if that's what makes you happy, go ahead. But with kids, I'm like, no, leave the kids out of it. Leave the kids out of it. It's the same with, you know, like drawing the line at the sports thing, right? Because that's like an invasion on female privacy and also just safety. I'm a big, strong dude. You know, I'm literally five times as strong as a lot of women. You know, if I'm going to play rugby or American football or MMA or boxing or something like that. And it's like, how are people letting this slide? It's gone to the stage where the ideology has completely taken over people's mental faculties. It's like you can't even just think logically and clearly, right? The only way they can process this is, oh, you don't want this because you're a bigot. And it's just like, what is wrong with you? Like, this is not some crazy rocket science here. This is very basic biology. In some ways, I think it might unfortunately need to get worse before it gets better. I think it might need to get to a stage where it's just so, the consequences are just becoming so disastrous that, you know, even those people need to be like, maybe we need to reconsider this. Maybe some men need to start, you know, competing in the Olympics and smashing women physically. And I don't want that to happen. I don't want to see that. I don't want to watch that. But I kind of feel like, look, if you're going to let it, you know, that's the logical endpoint of this. That's the logical endpoint. Someone's going to get their bones broken. Someone's going to get concussed. Someone's going to get like seriously hurt in some of these sports. And that might be what it takes for someone to go, oh, maybe we shouldn't let men identify as women and box against them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Anyway, what I wanted to do, Cece, I meant to do this at the beginning, but you know, obviously we got straight into the topics, but I want to talk a little bit more about your own personal journey. I mean, sure. You said you started out as a liberal. At one point, am I right in saying you were also a feminist?
Okay. So not really. I always was uncomfortable with feminism, but because like I'm a woman and like a bit of a herd animal, I didn't want to be ostracized by my girlfriend. So I was like, yeah, you know, I'm a feminist, but I never would have like worn a feminist t-shirt or gone to a rally or something like that. You know, I did it because I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be accepted, you know? Gotcha.
So talk us through that. I mean,
to be totally honest, I started off, I was raised in a conservative Christian household, quite strict. And I mean, I was in church every Sunday, did the whole thing. And that was the beginning part of my life. And I found that very, kind of restrictive. And that's something you often hear, you know, when young people they grow up in a strict household, they kind of rebel against it sometimes. And so I went off to university, rejecting the old backwards ways of my Christian conservative family. And I got indoctrinated by a bunch of Marxist professors with feminist ideology. And I mean, like, I used to take feminist courses because
what did you study?
So I started off in journalism. I didn't like journalism. So then I switched to mass communication, which is kind of a broader form of journalism, which would encompass like TV, radio, journalism, fashion, media of all sorts, and also film.
I'm smiling because it sounds like mass communication sounds like propaganda.
It is literally propaganda. It is. And I'm a YouTuber. That's literally what it is. I'm not, I never hide that from people. I always think it's so funny.
Yeah.
That I have a degree essentially in propaganda. And I think that's probably why on some level I am now able to pick up on propaganda easily when I see it, especially when it comes from the left. But so I went through my indoctrination years. I didn't know a single conservative the entire time that I was in university. Not a professor, not a student, not a friend, no one. It was, and this is also in Canada, right? Okay. This is in a major city in Canada. So it would have been very liberal there anyways. And I just sort of assumed the kind of very like low IQ perspective that conservative bad, liberal good. That was my basic worldview, right? Conservative is old and backwards and liberal is like hip and cool. And we're the new kids. And this is the new way we're going to do things. Watch out, old people. Here we come. This kind of attitude, right? This went on for 5 years. This went on for 5 years and I never really questioned it. And then so I left university with that programming, with these assumptions about the world, whiteness had an inherent evilness to it, that colonialism means that all white people are bad and, you know, white guilt and the whole thing.
I'm curious because I hear a lot of stuff about what goes on in universities now mm-hmm. with these courses, but because I'm a computer science graduate. So, there isn't even an option for any kind of programming in that. Well, apart from literal programming, right?
Yeah.
So did they literally like teach you that? Like, did they literally have like parts of lectures saying, like, I'm curious, like.
We were taught that whiteness is a social construct which signifies hegemony and power. That comes from the colonial era, which people today still benefit from. Mm-hmm. That all Western countries that engaged in colonialism only had their wealth because they stole it from other people, that they offered nothing to the world from themselves, that everything that, you know, we know as being Western inventions or European inventions, you know, came off the backs of the people who they oppressed. Mm. That essentially was the kind of racial dynamic of the ideology. And then the feminism was another layer on top of that.
Wow.
Yeah. But there was one professor. I mean, I did gender studies courses as electives, actually. I had like a trans professor like 8 years ago, you know, like this has been in the university for a long time, these sorts of ideas. And they're just now gaining prominence in the public sort of awareness. But yeah, I mean, I kind of, I mean, I don't know. I guess I even back then I was a little bit anti-establishment, and I kind of felt a discomfort with feminism. You know, like I felt like there was something cringy about it even back then. And I took those courses because they were easy. I knew what to say. It was literally a formula. You say the right thing, you get your A, and it was like easy. But then when I got out of university, I had a ton of experiences with feminists. Now, not all feminists. I know some feminists actually who are quite feminine and totally stable relationships. They're great people. But specifically when I was living in Ireland, these really radical feminist girls who would kind of police my appearance. You shouldn't dress, I don't dress promiscuously. Like I'm a pretty modest person, but there was one time I was wearing a very feminine, like pink dress, like a long dress. Mm-hmm. And I had a friend saying, you should be careful when you're sort of eliciting the male gaze, you know, and this is a girl who is wearing like a button down and baggy jeans and Vans, right? Yeah. This kind of feminist, and feminists of the same sort kind of judge me by my appearance and by the fact that maybe I have like a feminine voice and I have feminine mannerisms. You know, femininity was seen as a weakness because the whole thing about feminism is that you are able to compete with men on men's level, right? So if you're playing into what your natural kind of inclination is as a feminine woman, you get judged for that by feminists. And I always hated that. Mm. And then Trump came along and I was at the time working in a yoga studio with like tons of feminists and like vegans. I was like in a vegan kitchen cooking and stuff. Okay. So you can imagine the sorts of girls, septum piercings, like henna, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hippy dippy girls. Now, lovely, lovely people, not trying to be mean or anything, but you know,
as long as you agree with them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we'd be in the kitchen talking as you do while you're cooking and stuff. And it was just constant. All of this stuff about how, you know, Trump is a Nazi, Trump is a fascist. Even people who were like PewDiePie is a fascist. And like, I've been watching YouTube for a really, really long time. And I knew that PewDiePie wasn't a Nazi. So I was just kind of like, these people are wrong. So I went and looked for myself and I found myself loving Trump. I found myself laughing all the time, you know, especially that Rosie O'Donnell comment.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was like, I mean, for me, because even back in my liberaler days, I was very anti-establishment. The fact that Trump wasn't a career politician, he appeared to be this edgy outsider. I felt like I was hearing his real voice and that it wasn't a script. That made me like him because I had felt so jaded by the Bush years. You know, the Bush years were just so depressing that I just tuned out Obama. You know, I was just like, I don't even care about American politics anymore. But this new fresh energy that Trump brought to the table really made me interested in conservatism. And then I went down the pipeline, Dave Rubin, you know, Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson, all of those big guys, you know, those were the next step. And then I sort of got
funny because those guys aren't even conservatives.
No, they're not. They're not. They're liberals. They're liberals. But yeah. That's the funny thing about the Overton window is that it has shifted so far in the favor of the extreme leftists that now classic liberals were kind of conservative seeming. You know, and that was kind of the first thing that I really started being exposed to. Jordan Peterson was a big part of it for me because at the time I was also not in a very happy place in my life. I was kind of dead end job, not a lot of direction, in an unhappy relationship, not looking after myself. And so for me, the kind of what I feel like is a little cringy now, the pick yourself up by your bootstraps kind of rhetoric. Yeah. Of Jordan Peterson, you know, the good dad kind of rhetoric.
You cleaned your room.
I cleaned my room and I did the self-authoring program and I made a little plan for my life. And, you know, I've been following it ever since. And 2 years now down the line, sharing the things that I've sort of achieved and the things that I'm thinking about and the development of my ideas, it's just gotten better and better. One of the biggest things that, you know, Jordan Peterson gave me, that whatever I feel about him now will never stop me being grateful to him for, is how powerful telling the truth is, not just to others, but to yourself. You can't fix your life. You can't get better and grow as an individual if you aren't able to be honest with yourself about the state that you are in and what you've done to put yourself there, basically. So yeah, that's kind of it.
That's it. That's the origin story. So one of the videos I watched on your channel, I think it's the most popular one on there, is saying, I lost all my friends in the culture war.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a very, I don't even know the word. It's just that was a fascinating listen.
Thank you.
Very honest and heartfelt. And I mean, is that still the way you feel?
Unfortunately, nothing has changed as a result. You know, I made that video in a bit of desperation because I had literally been experiencing a kind of battle of ideas with my best friends from university, you know, a friend who was like a women's studies major, you know what I mean? So like feminism was a very foundational part of her identity. And she found my social media, sort of saw me criticizing and making fun of social media, saw me using words that she believed to be politically incorrect. Not nice words. And you know, being a troll, you know, that's my sense of humor. Sorry, I've got four brothers. Like that's just the way I am, you know? And she ghosted me. She ghosted me, and ironically, she decided to have her boyfriend or her husband now talk to me for her. So I was in this really weird back and forth of like trying to salvage a friendship and not being able to, because I couldn't talk to her because she wouldn't dialogue with me. She just shut me out and I couldn't take it anymore. And I was just like, look, I need to choose me in this, you know? And this is something that a lot of people who have moved more right or, you know, kept their position firm as classic liberals as the left has become more extreme have dealt with is the breakdown of their family relationships, their friendships, you know, even work relationships. People have lost jobs. People have had their lives very affected by the culture war, you know, that's been going on ever since Trump, really. And My purpose with making that video was really not to encourage people to just cut ties because of political differences. That's not at all what I wanted to say. But if people are going to ghost you, disavow you, you know, what are you supposed to do in that situation? You're going to just prostrate yourself and bend a knee and, you know, be like this worm that's just like begging for acceptance? No, like you can't do that. I think you have to choose yourself at the end of the day. And I think it's also a very natural thing, politics or not, that sometimes we outgrow friendships. Yeah. You know, sometimes we need to let relationships that are toxic go. Yeah. And I'm always open to them coming back into my life. I will always have a very soft spot in my heart for them. I don't care that they're liberals. Like that doesn't actually bother me. Bothers them that I'm not.
I mean, what is it that has led to this situation where people are literally ending relationships, getting divorced, losing friendships over politics? I mean, that didn't used to be the case. You know, people would disagree and it was like, okay, we can disagree. I mean, I've got so many friends I disagree with stuff on, right? Like I've got a lot of my friends lean more left than I do. Lots of us have different ideas of some of the things we were talking about earlier, like the level of racism in society and how it affects things and how it should be addressed. I'm very anti-affirmative action, but you know, I've got lots of friends who think like, no, affirmative action is a good idea because of X, Y, Z. And they're all super smart people and they're all very good people. So, you know, we can listen to each other's opinions and we can talk and we can converse and there's no assumption of malice on either side.
Yes. Right?
I don't think my friend thinks that because he's evil. He doesn't think I think, you know, we know each other. So it's not like, oh, Zuby's just like some evil radical guy. You know, it's like, no, he's just looking at it from this perspective. I'm looking at, you know, it's really empathy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really empathy. That's all it is. And that seems to be missing. I don't know if it's because of the hype that was caused by Trump and by Brexit in the UK. I don't know if it's social media, which is just making everything that much worse. I it might be all these factors, but I don't know. It's sad when I hear these stories of people losing, especially long-term friendships or romantic relationships or anything like that because of political differences. I mean, if you're both on super extreme ends of either spectrum, then okay, that might not work to begin with. But you know, yeah. I do believe that 90% of the population is like fairly centered.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think, you know, the thing that kind of makes it tricky for people like people who live in the UK or people who live in Canada is that we have very strict hate speech laws. If you are accused of hate speech in either of these countries, you can get some pretty serious punishments for that. And, you know, people, because there is this climate of self-censorship and wanting to protect oneself and insulate one's life away from people who could be deemed people espousing hate speech, there is this need to just eliminate the person as an act of self-preservation. And I think that's what happened with my friends. They saw what I was saying that was, you know, anti-feminism, you know, speaking out against feminism and saying, no, I think this is actually not helping women for these reasons. Or saying, you know, mass immigration, unending mass immigration is not good for the nation as a whole, you know, saying things like that. Or what was the other one? I guess even promoting Christianity. You know, these are people who are very secular and see Christianity as being extremely morally oppressive to people. Yeah. So all of these things to them is, it's not just a difference in opinion. It's literal hate speech. Mm. It's something which in their mind leads to violence against people who are, you know, different than them. And from that perspective, I can understand why they wanted to distance themselves from me. I don't agree with them. I don't think I would challenge anyone to find me espousing violence or encouraging violence towards anyone for any reason on any platform. But to them, what I was saying not only was seen as something which is hurting others, but I think because they were so identified with, you know, the label feminist and the ideology of liberalism, they couldn't see my criticism of these things as anything other than an attack on them as individuals. Yeah. When they saw me criticizing feminism, my feminist friend felt that I was attacking her.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because the people who have become, say, or the people who are secular liberals or leftists, I find them to be a lot more religiously intolerant than actual religious conservative people. Like, it's really weird. It's like there's been this inversion. Like, I remember in the 90s when it was generally like right-wing Christians who were really, really like stuffy and intolerant and were clamping down on free speech, in fact, right? So whether it was music or especially hip hop and metal, video games, movies, right? They were the ones who had the picket signs and were, you know, trying to boycott people. I remember when Eminem blew up as a rapper and they were trying to get his music banned off. They're like, this was generally like Christian right-leaning groups and parties and organizations and individuals. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really strange how the whole thing has just, it's flipped on its head now. Yeah. Now conservatism is the counterculture, right? Yeah. The dissidents are all like the dissidents are the conservatives and the libertarians who are like, oh no, there are two genders, right? Those are now the dissidents. And it's really strange to me, right? It's like, on this side, you've been talking about tolerance for so long. You've been talking about tolerance and tolerance and not being bigoted and not. And then the hypocrisy on a daily basis, it just kind of amazes me.
Yes.
I know exactly. It's very, very bizarre. Yeah.
I think that point and being aware of that point and sort of seeing the sort of inversion aspect of it is something that should remind us that at the end of the day, like, yes, having political convictions is important. You know, as individuals in a democracy, we need to be politically aware of what's going on. We should have our positions. We should be informed so we can make informed votes and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's just politics. It's a game kind of in and of itself. Do you know the philosopher named Alan Watts, possibly?
I do. I'm not familiar with his work, but I know the name.
You know him, yeah. So he has a really great quote, and he says, politics is like sleeping. First you sleep on your left, and then you sleep on your right, and then you sleep on your back, and it's thus that the world goes round. right? And that's just it. You know, this is why I'm kind of in my content, I'm trying to shift towards promoting what I think is good, which is family and femininity and, you know, being of strong moral character and, you know, religion and these sorts of things, because there is this kind of poisoning of your heart and your soul if you're just obsessing about these things all day long, you know? Sure. And it can just feel kind of depressing when you look out at the world and you see this just constant battling and, you know, like you said, friends are being, you know, friendships are being destroyed and everything. If you're only focusing on the negative and the sort of team sport aspect mm-hmm. of politics, you lose sight of what's really important.
That's very true. I mean, if you spend all day fighting demons, whether it's on Twitter or in real life, you eventually become one, right? If you start trying to fight SJW stuff all the time, you end up becoming like your own kind of SJW.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. I'm so guilty of that. You know, I'm sure that I have been a right-wing social justice warrior on numerous occasions in my Twitter lifetime.
You can always find some stupid tweet or stupid article or stupid blog post or dumb opinion, which you can just spend all day just finding those and criticizing them. And
it's true. And that's something that you see a lot of on Twitter. And I find this very interesting. Right-wing Twitter is more filled with images of like, look at this leftist thing, lol, like laughing at it. Like, look at this crazy leftist thing. And we're exposing ourselves to things which make us react.
Yeah.
And that's what gets the likes and the retweets. Right. There isn't like, you don't see like, this is my manifesto for nationalism and we're going to solve society's problems from the perspective of conservatives. You don't see that stuff because that doesn't get likes and retweets. You know, and that's kind of the sinister part of social media, is that it's not solution oriented.
No, it's about point scoring.
Yes.
Point scoring. What's the term? Yeah. Yeah. I get caught in it sometimes. I can't lie.
We all do.
Yeah, exactly. Because what always happens with me though is I'll put something out. And I mean, I've got a big following, especially on Twitter now, but it's like, I'll put something out and then 4 or 5 days, like a week later, sometimes a month later, I'm still receiving responses to something that I wrote literally like a week ago. And like my brain and my life has just kind of moved on and people are still like just going and going. And I'm just like,
yeah, I often mute.
Mute is great.
Because I can't take anymore. And I also like, I wipe my Twitter clean.
Okay.
Every month or so, because the thing is, when you're the kind of person who is like me and probably like yourself too, and you know, you're a little bit of a troll, you know, and you say things which are edgy and that's your sense of humor, that can be easily taken out of context. It can be easily reported, and then all that you've built on your platform can be gone like that. Yeah. And so I just wipe it clean.
It makes sense. I purposefully do not delete my tweets.
That's brave.
When I run in like political sphere in like 10 or 15 years, I want them to dig them all out.
Integrity move.
so I cannot apologize. So Zuby, you said 2018. You said feminism is cancer upon society. What do you mean by that? I mean this. Yes. We'll see how that strategy works out for me. I don't think I've ever written anything that is like so beyond the pale that, you know, it's just my opinions. But my thought on it is like, look, the extremists on like the other side who are pushing some of these absolutely bananas ideas of, you know, men getting pregnant and menstruating and females having penises and all that, like they're not shutting up. So I'm like, look, well,
you have to push back.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. There has to be someone else. There have to be other people who are like...
I said that in a tweet a couple weeks ago about some, like, because there are tons of these people on, like, literally blue checkmark people on Twitter who are like, I hate white people. White people are so evil. And like, there are whole accounts that are dedicated to getting screenshots of this and, like, compiling them. There are thousands of them. And I said this, like, in one tweet a few weeks ago. So, like, you know, I respect that this is your opinion. I believe you have a right to say it. I disagree with you, but I just can't let you get away with it. that's my perspective on it. So, you know, if we are engaged in a cultural war, it is a war of ideas. And while we shouldn't let the politics and the political side of things be, you know, the priority in our lives, we can't let this sort of madness, this liberal madness, dominate our societies, because, you know, the way that it will affect future generations will be so damaging. Our countries won't be recognizable in 100 years.
No, that's true. It's true. So let's talk about someone a little happier.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I saw that you recently got engaged. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. You touched on femininity. Now, I've had a lot of guys from the sort of masculine sphere of mm-hmm. Twitter featured on the podcast, but we haven't really talked much about femininity. I can't think of a better candidate to talk about it. So how do you define femininity, and what do you think are its virtues? What do you think people are missing? I don't even know what the question exactly there is, but
yeah, no, I get you.
Yeah.
I think one of the easiest ways that, you know, I tend to think about describing femininity is in relation to its counterpart, masculinity. And there is a saying, I think it was Illimitable Man said it. And I thought it was a very beautiful way of putting it, that, you know, men are made. Masculinity is something which is a creative process, whereas femininity is something that's preserved. I think femininity is something that is the natural state of most women. Now, of course, the way that you express your femininity will be determined by your biology. You know, like, hormones are a huge part of the way that we express our femininity and masculinity as people. But femininity is defined by, in its real practical terms, chastity, modesty, gentleness, kindness. But then, you know, in motherhood, there can be a kind of fierceness to it as well.
I'm making a list. I'm going to put these into a tweet and see how many people I trigger.
The yin yang kind of element of like energy, femininity is the yin. And I think women can embody this in like a variety of different ways. This was something that I was talking about on my Twitter not that long ago. Was someone from the Red Pill Man Twitter was like, feminine women don't do masculine hobbies. And I just really didn't like that. That didn't sit well with me. Because, you know, I grew up with four brothers. So, you know, I like being outside and hiking, and like, I actually weightlift, like I do deadlifts, and just like my fiance, you know. The weightlifting, which is traditionally and technically kind of a more masculine activity, the way that I do it, because I target the parts of my body that I want to look more feminine, has made me more feminine, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, and same with like shooting, like I like to shoot guns, and I bet I could outshoot the guy who made that tweet in heels. You know, it's not about the hobby itself. It's not necessarily about what it is that you're doing. It's how you do it. You know, it's like a metaphysical thing, femininity. And I think it can be expressed in a variety of different ways. It's one of those things, it's hard to peck down, but you know it when you see it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, some people are probably trying to take this out of context, but it's a lot more passive than masculinity.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Masculinity is very, it's very active, right? You can be a woman and you can just walk out of your house and walk around and look pretty, and you know, things will happen, right? You know, like you know, you, no, but you know what I mean. Like things might happen, right? If you're a guy, like nothing happens. Like you go out. If you don't make something happen as a guy, nothing happens. Like nothing like comes to you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like nothing comes to you. Like as a woman, like if you optimize your looks and you dress well and present yourself in a nice way, things will come to you. Not even just for men. Like the world will give you stuff. I think if you want the world to give you anything, like if you don't want to be like sitting outside, like shaking a cup, you've got to go out and you've got to do something. That's like a very blunt version.
I think that's totally right. I really do. And you can't underestimate the maternal instinct and how that is expressed through femininity. And I think that this, you know, the maternal instinct is something which is very fundamental to feminine nature. And you will see, you know, feminists or feminist types try and do everything that they can to subvert their own maternal instinct.
Oh boy.
But then that ends up getting translated onto like their cats and their dogs, mm-hmm. and, you know, helping people who are not a part of their immediate family unit. You know, you'll see a lot of kind of charity work mm-hmm. being done by these types, you know, trying to help the most disadvantaged. That nurturing maternal instinct is going to express itself one way or another, whether it's through raising children, which I think is in most situations the ideal manifestation of the maternal instinct, or it's going to be like I'm a cat lady type thing.
yeah. So why do you think there's I mean, we've been talking about inversion for a long time, but why are people, both men and women, seem to be rejecting the ideas of both roles in the Western world anyway? Like I said, I mean, my family background is originally from Nigeria. I grew up in Saudi Arabia. So stuff is still very traditional in those places. Like there's no confusion about what a man is and what a woman is. And gender roles are pretty, you know, some people might say too clearly defined, but they're pretty well defined. You know, there's some, certainly in Nigeria, you know, there's a lot more wiggle room. Saudi, it's kind of like locked.
Yeah.
But in the UK and Canada, in Australia, you know, in parts of Europe, in the US, it just seems like, I don't know, even guys, mm-hmm. will, there are certain men who will hear even what you said and they'll fight you on that, saying, no, women should, you know, be like men, basically.
Yeah.
And like, is it just the programming?
I think it's both ideological and biological. I think the ideology of being gender fluid or being a butch girl or a more feminine guy is cool. It's trendy. It is the preferred way to be right now in pop culture. So that has influence on people's minds. You can't deny that. But I think that there is another aspect of this, in that we are living in extremely toxic environments. Everything we eat is wrapped in plastic. Most people are eating highly processed foods. All of these things affect our endocrine system and our hormonal balance. And there have been studies that show that the hormonal balance of mothers when they have children, you know, in their womb when they're pregnant, can determine what the functioning of that child's endocrine system will be like when they are adults.
Oh, wow.
So you have a, you know, pregnant woman who is low or imbalanced in her testosterone and estrogen levels, and you have a male baby which is being flooded with estrogen, there is evidence to suggest that you will end up with a gay boy, or a boy who would maybe end up with gender dysphoria. Now, that's not hard line science. That was one study that I saw, but that makes sense to me. You know, that really makes sense to me. We are living in very highly estrogenic environments, and I think that estrogen, the way that it affects women when it's like out of whack, there is this kind of shrillness, there's this kind of harshness, there's this kind of like erratic emotionalness, which you do see in lots of women, modern women today. And obviously when men have an endocrine system which favors estrogen, you're going to see a softer, more feminine, like that's why you see like gay guys, they genuinely and naturally, they move in a feminine way, they speak in a feminine way, everything about them has this feminine quality. So I don't think you can underestimate the hormonal and the biological element of this, because I think it plays a really fundamental role as well.
Mm. You need to stop drinking the water.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, it's something that I worry about all the time, because, you know, I currently live in a city. I'm trying to get out of the city, but you know, when you work in a city and your livelihood is dependent on the convenience of the city, that's not easy. And you know, I'm constantly, as soon as I get home, you know, take everything out of the plastic, put it in glass, you know, and it's like, it's this thing that it's like an uphill battle. It's very, very difficult to try and keep your food and what you ingest and your environment free of these sort of very modern toxins.
It's very true. And I mean, male testosterone levels and sperm counts and all that have been tanking over the past couple of decades as well. So,
I
think I'm very like conscious of it all. Hit my workouts and make sure I eat my steaks. Yes.
That's really important for men. Men, yeah. What's really interesting as well that I read, it was a part of the same study that, so men who, so when, obviously when you do a workout, when you're doing your deadlifts, you get a testosterone boost, right? And that is also true for like, if you're like going into an interview, really competitive job, you really want it, you get a testosterone boost from these sort of competitive environmental external activities that you're doing. It affects your biology. And women who are in corporate environments, competitive environments, test to be higher in testosterone than women who aren't. So our environments and what we're doing in our environments and actually like what things we do affects our biology as well, you know, not just like what we're ingesting and what we're being exposed to, but you have women being encouraged to act like men. Of course, that's going to make them more manly, you know? So there's that aspect of it as well.
It would be interesting to know what the, that's like a bit of a chicken and the egg one, isn't it? In terms of the job one.
Yes.
Because it would be interesting to know, you know, do women who have more masculine traits or higher testosterone, or are they just naturally, I'd imagine they're going to be more drawn to some of those high-powered careers or sports or competitive fields.
It's possible. I feel like when I've had a really good workout and I do my deadlifts and stuff, I admittedly haven't been going to the gym as much as I should lately, but I know that when I am and when I do my deadlifts for like days afterwards, it's like I have this clarity, you know, like I feel strong in myself and it's like less of this like feminine, irrational, emotional chitter chatter up there, you know, it's just like a little drip of what it's like to be a man.
what are you pulling on deadlifts? I just need to make sure I'm not under threat.
Oh my God. It's so embarrassing. The best I've ever done is 125 pounds.
125 pounds. Okay.
Yeah. Which is like roughly my body weight. So I think like that was my goal, was to be able to deadlift my body weight. And like, I'm not going for bulk.
Yeah. So. It's good. I'm just making sure my records are safe. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I've no
When people start talking deadlifts, I'm like, okay. Let me make sure, like, don't want to be challenged here. We've just gone over an hour. So I feel like we could talk for another one, but I know I'm going to have to edit this down and I don't want it to take forever. What have you got coming up? I know you, of course, you've got your YouTube channel. I take it you're going to be putting out lots of new videos. Where can people find you?
So you can search Critical Condition on YouTube or at CC Bucko on Twitter. My content on Twitter is a little bit more daily, a little bit more news focused, a little bit more comedy focused. On YouTube, I make two different types of videos. I do videos where I just sit in front of the camera and it's kind of stream of consciousness, zero editing. So if you have the attention span and the patience for that style of video, you can check those out. And those are just like my personal opinions. Oftentimes I'm figuring things out as I speak in those videos. They tend to be some of people's favorites videos by me. And I'm also working on a podcast right now called Girl Talk, where I have been trying to interview and chat with different types of right-wing women from across the right-wing spectrum, because there's a lot of diversity in opinion, even among right-wing women, and to sort of talk about the things that are important to us, to talk about fertility, to talk about motherhood, to talk about, you know, real women's wisdom, their lived wisdom, and sort of collect that into a unified series that young women or women who are feeling a little lost or feeling like, I don't have a community, they can go there and they can see that there's a wide range of women out there who, you know, they reject the feminism, they reject liberalism. These are brilliant women. There is this often misconception that right-wing women are like lobotomized Stepford wife type women. They're high IQ, lovely women with a lot to offer. So I'm trying to feature as many of them as possible. You'll get one of those on a Sunday of every week.
Awesome. Cece, thank you so much for joining the show. It's been awesome talking to you. And I wish you good luck with all of your future product. I wish you good luck with all of your future projects, not products. Projects.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope we can do this again sometime in the future.
Absolutely, we will. Details matter. And at OZ Lifestyle Brands, they're all about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both classic and casual designs. They also make shopping the easiest it's ever been for you while leaving plenty of change in your pocket for your next adventure. I highly recommend them. They've got some really dope wallets, watches, t-shirts, whole bunch of cool stuff there. If you're a man who's looking to style up their game without blowing the bank, I highly recommend OZ Lifestyle Brands.
OZ Lifestyle Brands delivers a unique experience to elevate style for men with ultra discerning tastes. OZ is for men who found their calling but don't need to shout about it. So go check out their full range of products at OZLifestyleBrands.com. That is OZLifestyleBrands.com. To get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off. That's ZUBYMUSIC at checkout for 20% off at OZLifestyleBrands.com. Go check them out.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.